This evening, we're talking about bee culture. And bee culture, one is obviously a concept of conservation, a concept of preserving bees and everything related to the environment for their well-being and for ours. But then there's also the organization, there's the company that's called Bee Culture, operating here in Gauteng particularly. And Bee Culture is spelled with a K, Bee Culture Environmental Conservation Organization, specializing in beekeeping. And it's our great pleasure this evening to welcome to the airwaves of Radio Islam International, Malcolm Duthie. He's a beekeeper and member of Bee Culture, who specifically go out, removes, rehives honeybees so that they could give them a new home in an apiary to one day, allow them to become strong enough to produce honey. And very interesting about Malcolm, as we would chat a bit about towards the end, he goes out regularly to schools and to interest groups to try and educate young people about the importance of the many species of bees and the role that they play in food production and their importance to the environment in general. So we don't have a school visit lined up for him just yet at this hour of a Sunday evening, but we have an interview, and he's going to be educating us about these issues, bees and their role in the environment, honey. As you would have noticed on the show, every now and then we do bring up this topic because I think it's a critical one for us, for our health, for our well-being, for the environment. And even within our faith, you would very well know, the merits of honey in terms of its healing properties that are mentioned in the Quran, as well as the teachings of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And an entire chapter in the Quran named the chapter of the bee. So, something not far from our worldview as well. Shane, thank you so much. Man very closely related to Shane was also from the company. Malcolm Duthie. Malcolm, thank you so much for your time. Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening, Ibrahim. Thank you for having me, and good evening to your listeners.
You know, Malcolm, when I saw an article about your company in a local newspaper, I just stumbled upon it, I said it must be, a kind of priority to speak to you, highlight the good work that you're doing, also the issues that come out from the field that you're working in and what you encounter and what you observe on a daily basis. As I've been saying, the name of the company is Bee Culture, culture spelled with a K. Culture has different connotations. Exactly what is bee culture? What's your vision with it? What's your history?
Well, I've been a beekeeper on and off for the best part of 30 years. And recently, my son became interested in the whole concept of beekeeping and the conservation efforts that go with it. And he's been the one who's actually been the main driving force behind the bee culture. It's a great pity you couldn't speak to him, because he'd be far better equipped to speak to you. But what we try and do is, so as you mentioned in your introduction, we go out and we remove swarms of bees which become problematic for whatever reason. And we rehive them into beehives, which are called Langstroth. We use a Langstroth hive, and give them a new place to live, and hopefully become strong. And and one day be in a position to produce honey for us.
This concept, Malcolm, of rehiving, relocating these bees, explain to us where does that fit in? Does that imply that we're dealing with bees in urban centers? And, you know, is it the fact that people are encroaching upon their territory, or do bees look for different territory or different places to house themselves that are sometimes problematic that gives rise to the need for rehiving? And once you embark on this rehiving, why would you deem it so important? I mean, that's one of the core roles that you play, the services that you offer. Rehiving, why is this so important in the wider context of bee conservation?
Look, it is really critical, because in the area that your radio station operates from, I assume it's the north of Johannesburg. So in that area specifically, in that and up into Pretoria, we're extremely fortunate in that we have between 17 and 22 wild swarms per square kilometre, and that's very different to a lot of other places in the world where they don't have wild swarms anymore. They have to basically manufacture bees, which they bring in small packages and develop colonies from there. So from that point of view, we are very fortunate that we have this amazing canopy that was planted many years ago, stretching north in the north of Johannesburg, which produces flowers basically throughout the year. And all through the season, and is able to support these colonies. But having said that, you encapsulated the whole problem very well, because there is a lot of urban encroachment insofar as these bees are, they are coexisting with us, and for the most part, people are very happy to just accommodate them and get along with them. But as the colony gets stronger and we have rain in the summer months, and the queen is laying a lot of eggs and there are a lot of bees that she's producing, the cavity dwellers, so the cavity where they are, might become too small. They might become aggressive, and they've got a lot to protect, because they're protecting their brood and they're protecting their honey store. So if they are disturbed by, for example, for whatever reason, by animals, domestic animals, or a lawnmower or a weed eater, they're doing what instinct tells them. They're protecting their home, and often with a bad outcome for humans. So and for domestic animals. So That's when they become problematic in an urban environment, and someone's called in to move them. And it's interesting, because we work quite a lot with pest control companies, and they get a lot of requests specifically from their clients to say, look, we don't want the bees destroyed or killed. We just want them moved somewhere where they're not in direct contact with humans, which is where we come in.
And when you come in, the name of your company suggests, and the ethos that underpins it is one of conservation. Obviously, that's the key idea that you have in mind. But the fact that we're talking about conservation so strongly, Malcolm, I would imagine, implies that we do have a crisis on our hands. I mean, it's I'm going to listen to you on what's the scale of this crisis, but we've been hearing this on a global scale as well as a local scale for quite a while, these kind of reports. I'm not sure if they're alarmist or not, but, expressing concern about the state and the health of honeybee populations and the environments in South Africa. Are we in a crisis? What's the biggest challenges that bees are facing in South Africa today?
Look, they are facing a lot of challenges, and as with a lot of natural fauna and flora largely associated with the encroachment and expansion of man. And so South Africa is a marginal, we're talking about the honeybee specifically, although I must say that there are over 1,200 species of bee in South Africa alone. And most people, when you talk about bees, they talk about honeybees, but there are lots of other species of bees around. But I mean, that aside, yeah. So there's a worldwide phenomenon that's called colony collapse, and there was damning evidence in Germany, where beekeepers were pollinating crops, and these crops, the seeds are impregnated with an insecticide, which prevents insects from damaging the plant or the crop. So this was bees were obviously trying to pollinate these crops, and they were dying en masse because the trees or the plants that they were visiting were essentially poisoned. So there was a big I think I don't want to mention the name of the it's a worldwide chemical company. It would be instantly known if mentioned. And there was a big court case, and I don't remember the outcome, but I think there was a settlement where they didn't admit liability, but certainly that highlighted the fact that a lot of these colony collapses are caused by these genetically modified seeds, which have insecticide built into them to protect the trees, but a byproduct is that they kill the insects which land on these plants, and so that is something which I think is being addressed, but it is slow in coming, but it's well aware, people are very well aware of it.
The issue about responses, Malcolm, would then be if we have a crisis on our hands and the different elements to the environmental crisis, climate change, so many things that need our attention. It's only sometimes when people find a connection or people see the relevance and see the potential impact that the collapse of these areas of the environment have on us, sometimes because of our selfish nature, that we, are deemed important to react and mobilize. When it comes to honeybees, when it comes to the issues that you've described, the nature of the challenge that's being faced by them, is it something that's only going to have an impact on honey production, for instance, people who consume that, industries that are related to that, or pollination, is the health of honeybee populations an important indicator, and the issues that you describe can have very much more wide-ranging impacts than we could actually fathom at this stage?
Yes, look, they are integral because so the honeybee is not the only pollinator, but it's a very important one. And in some places, you can go into YouTube and you see, particularly in the east, and I think China specifically, people are actually pollinating fruit trees and whatever crop they're trying to grow by hand because they've wiped out the bee pollinators. The bee populations. So there's two aspects to the thing. So, from a broader ecological point of view, the pollination is probably key, and the honey production, although it goes hand in hand, is probably secondary. So that's the major threat is the pollination threat, and I think that's what ultimately has to be addressed.
A question here for you on honey, particularly because your work Malcolm, as bee culture is very much situated, as I would understand, within an urban environment. When it comes to honey, you know, we have honey coming to us from all parts of the world today, and there's obviously issues that come into that as well that not necessarily we have to speak about, but you know, what is real honey, what is not real honey, and many false honeys also masquerading on the market. In the environments that we live and with the kind of foliage that's closest to us, is there a particular benefit to us consuming the honey that is most easily, or not most easily accessible, but honey that is derived from the sources closest to us versus honey that might be coming from some distant parts of the country or distant parts of the world per se?
Look, yeah, it's not necessarily the honey that's closest to you that is best, but what you've touched on an extremely important point, and it's something that's being addressed by the governing organisation of the bee farmers, an organisation called Sabio, and that's honey adulteration. And if you, it's very easy to look up. Honey is one of the most adulterated foods in the world. I think it's second to olive oil. So, yeah, it's a massive problem. And on our group, almost weekly, there's, you know, somebody else trying to pass whatever. It's basically syrup off as honey. I mean, if you go to any of the major supermarket chains and you see 500 grams of what's called honey at, I think there was one supermarket chain was selling it for 29 rand for 500 grams. it's just impossible that that's honey. It's just impossible to put it on the shelf for that price. So it's detrimental in many respects because it undermines the commercial beekeeping industry. Puts a lot of pressure on beekeepers who can in just about all instances identify the source of their honey. So, they can say that we harvested this honey on this date and it came from this apiary site, or, you know, it could have been from one of three apiary sites. And a lot of the honey which is imported into the country comes from, if you look at the packaging, it says it comes from, you know, a combination of countries, and that's as far as it goes. And another thing that you have to bear in mind is that local honey would be, so it would probably just be it might just be strained to get rid of the wax comb which houses the honey. But any honey which comes into the country has to be irradiated by the Department of Agriculture before it crosses the border or at point of entry. So that in itself kills off a lot of the properties in the product which you are actually buying the product for.
There's just a follow-up question on that, Malcolm, if you can. So somebody is asking, in terms of adulterated honeys, is it possible for what is quite visibly thick raw honey to, in any instance, be adulterated, or you know, is its very nature means that that it would always be authentic?
It's the essence of the problem, because it's very, very difficult to tell unless it's tested in a laboratory. I mean, there was the world, I think it's called AP Mondial. It's the world sort of world gathering of honey producers, and they have competitions there. And so of the people that submitted honey to be judged, I can't remember the exact percentage, but there was, I think it was in the 30% that was rejected for one reason or another, containing insecticides or being adulterated in some way. So it's a massive problem, and the only way to be really sure is to buy from a beekeeper that you know and trust, and you can probably be sure that that is the real thing, because I don't think, you know, personally, I belong to quite a large association, and I don't know anybody who would want to risk their reputation by adulterating honey, you know, sort of from the association that I belong to. And I think that's the same throughout the country. But as I said, the adulteration of honey is a major problem. It's something that is trying to be addressed by the body, but it remains a huge problem.
I'm obviously almost out of time, but the sweetness of the honey just keeps sucking me in more and more questions, Malcolm. I just got two final questions for you. This one also just coming in now, if you can assist us. Somebody's asking, what is meant by badger-friendly honey? I think very often on some products you'd see a kind of badge or a kind of mark to indicate that it's badger friendly.
Okay, so look, it's not only commercial beekeepers, but a lot of beehives are housed in very isolated sites, or not necessarily, they don't have to be that isolated, but it's sites which are populated by badgers as well. And the badgers are, I think you only have to go onto YouTube again to look for Stoffel to see how persistent they are, and they cause a lot of damage to wooden beehives. So people have done various things to protect the beehives against the badgers, and I think at one stage, it goes back in, you know, a couple of decades now, but I think a lot of people badgers are being trapped and sort of killed on a sort of ad hoc basis, and it became quite a topical issue. So I think that's what that relates to. But it just means that no badgers were harmed, in the collection of that honey, or the hives were protected in such a way from the badgers that, you know, the badgers weren't harmed in any way.
Finally, Malcolm, as far as again the terrain in which you operate, it would be, you know, in all kinds of environment, but in the urban centres here, in Gauteng or other parts of the country, we interact with other kinds of creatures, amongst them being bees. And given the problems, the challenges that we face, the potentially devastating impact that reduction in bee populations could have on us and our survival as human beings, what is it that's important for us within our urban environments, within our lifestyle choices, that we should take into consideration to be able to be part of the solution rather than the problem?
I think you have to... I think education, as in with many things, where people are ignorant, not through their own fault, but they don't react in a way which they probably would have done had they had more knowledge. And I think that goes throughout life, and I think that relates to a lot of problems that people have with each other. And so I think education is key. I think you have to learn where everybody has to be more tolerant, and just, you know, learn to get on with nature and respect the role that nature plays, because I think that's severely lacking. And, you know, if you do that, there's room for everybody. So, I mean, I always think of an analogy. In my spare time, I ride a mountain bike. So if you ride up and down the Bromfontein Spruit, you're riding at a pace which the trails that are there can accommodate. You're with walkers, and you're with dogs, and you're with trail runners. And if everybody just takes the time to respect everybody else, there's room for everybody. But, you know, unfortunately in life, there seems to be always one person who's not willing to accommodate anybody else and just do their own thing, irrespective of the consequences. And I think that's something, I think that's something we all need to think about a bit more and just have a bit more respect for everybody else than try and accommodate everybody, whether they are, you know, whether they are a walker or a runner or an animal on a leash or on that path, there's room for everybody. And I think that that's the same with a lot of things in life.
Malcolm, part of that education process, as you mentioned, you sometimes go out to schools and so forth to be able to make people more aware about bees and our role. In terms of the services beyond that commercially that you offer, you know, just a list of those, and how would people be able to get in touch with you? Which particular areas do you does your work predominantly take place in?
Look, thank you very much. I wouldn't say we are strictly commercial. I'm a hobbyist. So it's primarily my son Shane who goes out. Well, it is him who goes out to the schools and does the talks, the educational talks, which have been extremely well received, and he gets calls all the time to do them. And I use the extractions to fund the beekeeping, and it gives you a chance to meet a lot of different people in lots of different situations, and it gives us a chance to try and acquire colonies which we wouldn't normally, and we're not successful in retaining all of them, but it certainly helps us to acquire colonies that we probably wouldn't acquire any other way. We have a Facebook page, and that's how people can get in contact with us if they need any advice or anything that they are unsure of. And I must say, one of the things I always say to people when they contact me, the first thing I say to them generally is, are you sure you really need to move this colony? Can you not live with them? And in some cases, obviously, if they're in a pool pump or, you know, somewhere where they're in direct contact with people, then there is no other choice. But quite often they're in a tree stump or quite high up in a tree, and people, you know, look at it again and think, well, yeah, they're not really causing us, you know. We're afraid that we might get stung, but they're not in our direct path, and we're not in their direct path. So we should be able to live together, and a lot of the time resolves the problem.
Indeed, Malcolm, it's been great chatting to you. Really appreciated your insights this evening and fielding all our many questions about the subject this evening. Thank you so much, and all the best for this very important mission that you've taken up on your shoulders. People want to get in touch with you. The website is beeculture.com for any services that people require or advice. Culture there with a K. Thank you so much for your time, and have yourself a great week ahead, Malcolm.
Thank you, everyone, and same to you.